Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. This week we celebrate Purim, so in keeping with English Corner tradition, I'm going to read you a story. This one is called The Gold Spinners, and is one of the lesser-known stories by Shalom Aleichem, who is one of the best-known Yiddish writers. It was published in English in the book Holiday Tales of Shalom Aleichem, selected and translated by Aliza Chevron, and published by Aladdin Books in 1985.
The Gold Spinners. Who were they? Ask something easy, like how they spun gold. They were called by that name in Kazrilevka purely out of envy. They were envied, you see, because they knew how to make money. Don't get me wrong, they were poor people, may it never be your lot, just like the rest of the poor people in Kazrilevka. But when Purim came, they made money hand over fist. The Lord above had bestowed a blessing on each of them, giving to each a special talent, and the world envies people with talent. The fact is as old as the world itself. But instead of wasting any more time on these matters, we'll get right down to our story. Naphtali Longlegs was a Jew with remarkable legs, which seemed to start right at his neck. Nobody could ever keep up with Naphtali, not because he walked any faster, but because his stride was so much longer. One moment he was right beside you, and the next he was way ahead of you. Those legs were Naphtali's capital, his tools of the trade, his bread and butter in short. Naphtali was a professional errand runner. When a wealthy landowner came to Kazrilevka once in a blue moon, Naphtali would somehow get wind of it. His long legs would carry him speedily to the inn where the landowner was staying. "My dear, honorable sir, what is your wish?" he would ask. And whatever the landowner wished, Naphtali would obtain it for him in no time flat. A tailor, a shoemaker, a blacksmith, a servant, a horse, a scythe, a kettle drum, a witch, a curse on his head, you name it. The word "no" was not in Naphtali's vocabulary. The only problem was that Naphtali didn't have the field to himself. There were in Kazrilevka almost as many Jews as there were errand runners, and more errand runners than landowners. Now you can understand how Naphtali's legs were like money in the bank. Nevertheless, he still would have suffered had not God, in his infinite wisdom, favored his beloved people of Israel with Purim, that joyful, lively holiday. During that joyful, lively holiday, Naphtali's true talent shone forth in all its brilliance and glory. Naphtali was a born performer, and his Purim plays were made to order for his long legs. At first glance, you might think it ridiculous to connect Purim plays with legs. But don't take offense if I tell you that there is indeed a strong connection. Naphtali didn't play the roles of King Ahasuerus or Haman or Mordecai or Vashti. He played the role of Memuchan, King Ahasuerus's chamberlain, the man who ran the affairs of the court and palace. Whoever's acquainted with the story of Ahasuerus knows that the role of Memuchan is a very important one. One could even say that the whole play depends on him. Who calls Vashti to dance before the king? Memuchan. Who advises the king what must be done with Vashti when she refuses to dance? Memuchan. Who arranges for Mordecai to confer with Esther? Memuchan. Memuchan was here, Memuchan was there, Memuchan was everywhere. Memuchan, Memuchan, Memuchan. And you should have seen how our Memuchan worked those long legs. Here's an illustration. The door opened and in came the Purim players with a big "Gut Yontov, happy holiday." Naturally, all the actors had stage fright and hung back against the wall, their arms hanging at their sides. But our Memuchan strode out on his long legs with a sword in his hand and a paper hat on his head. He took one long step here and another long step there as he spouted rhymes. Let me tell you a secret. All those rhymes spoken by Naphtali, which you will hear, were written by Naphtali Longlegs himself. Listen. I, Memuchan, master of the court for crafty old King Ahasuerus, and also the master of his sport, was sent to Vashti the queen to command her to dance before the king in veils, bangles, and rings, and other shiny, noisy things. O beautiful Vashti, obey, obey. The king cannot wait for you all day. Queen Vashti, played by Beryl Stuffnose, reluctantly tore himself from the safety of the wall and answered him, also in rhymes written by Naphtali, in a whining, nasal, sing-song voice like a nervous bridegroom, come hither, all ye women of Porus and Modai, and all ye matrons of Shushan, listen to my tale and sigh. In the Megillah I'm always put down, but the king is really the one to blame. He's a nasty drunkard without fear or shame. Memuchan then became all fired up, pacing back and forth on his long legs, reciting rhymes of his own invention. What do you say to such outrageous stuff? Well, take it from me, I've had enough. If I could be sure that the king would not become upset, I'd cut off her wicked head myself without regret. King Ahasuerus raised his long staff, which was wrapped in gold foil, and said, as far as I'm concerned, you can execute everyone, so long as you keep the whiskey handy to the throne. Why do all my ministers look like they've been cursed? Here now, let's all quench our thirst. So fill your glasses and then shout, hey, for now we'll drink and dance and play until the sunlight brings the day. And the company joined in. So fill your glasses and then shout, hey, for now we'll drink and dance and play until the sunlight brings the day. Out stepped Mordecai, played by Nehemiah the shoemaker, a shabby hunchback with a beard made of flax. He knelt before the king and then addressed Memuchan, blinking his eyes strangely while gesticulating wildly with his hands and singing off-key. Since that day your majesty was left a lonely widower, your royal word went forth alike to lord and commoner. Throughout the 127 countries of your kingdom, that maidens be brought before you, rich or poor, smart or dumb. Oh, my dear king, do I have a lovely bride for you? She's sweet as applesauce, fresh as morning dew. Her name is Esther. She has no brother or sister, no father or mother. Her nearest birthday is her 20th, not counting holidays and the Sabbath. Memuchan strode back and forth again with fire in his voice. Hurry, hurry, let her come before us, to do a turn before King Ahasuerus. And if he takes a shine to her, he will place a crown on her. And you, Mordecai, for your matchmaking deed, will be given a hamantash with poppy seed. Oh, beautiful Esther, obey, obey. The king will make you his queen today. After the stage was set in this way, the real drama began. Naphtali's legs were stronger than iron to endure this strenuous Purim undertaking. But out of this effort, Naphtali realized a nice bundle of cash, because he was, after all, the director of the troupe, its producer, its writer, and its treasurer, all rolled into one. He spins gold, pure gold, that man, when Purim comes. So said all the Kazrilefka Jews who simply envied him, not so much for his talent as for his success in business. If Kazrilefka consumed as much honey cake, fruit cake, and angel cake every day of the year as it did on Purim, when people exchanged Purim gifts of baked goods, then Naphtali Longlegs wouldn't have to go through the trouble of being an errand runner all year and an actor on Purim. His wife, Sweet Revella, as she was called by everyone, would be able to support him and his household with plenty to spare. If Naphtali was famous for his legs, then his wife Rivella was no less famous for her hands. Rivella was a slightly built woman, a thin, tiny creature who alongside her husband looked like a plucked chicken. To look at her, who would believe that this little woman was capable of supplying an entire town with sweets for Purim exchanged by the townspeople? It's true there were other women in Kazrilevka who were in the same business, but who possessed such golden hands as sweet Rivella? Her torts and her honey cakes, her strudels and angel cakes, her poppy seed cookies and gingerbreads, her braided buns had acquired a reputation throughout the world, even as far as Yehupetz, a neighboring town which was in constant rivalry with Kazrilevka. And how did Yehupetz hear of Rivella? This is the way it happened. There was this prankster from Kazrilevka, where there are as many pranksters as there are stars in the sky, who decided to play a trick by making fun of the town of Kazrilevka by, of all things, deriding its local products. So what did this prankster do? He mailed a package of sweet Rivella's Purim cakes as a Purim gift to a rich relative in Yehupetz. In the Purim package, he enclosed a letter, very nicely written, in which he asked the rich relative to forgive him for sending such poor stuff. The prankster added that he could find nothing worse in Kazrilevka. So imagine the prankster's surprise when he received a thank you note from his rich relative with the request that he immediately buy up as much of these baked goods as possible, pack them up properly, and send them collect to Yehupetz. As you know, rich folks in general, and rich folks from Yehupetz in particular, love to eat, and especially crave sweets. From that time on, whole cases of Rivella's sweets were sent off each year to the rich Yehupetz relative for Purim. And that's how Rivella's fame reached even as far as Yehupetz. But if Rivella had had to depend on the Yehupetz business alone, she would have starved. The main part of her business was in her own hometown. During the few days before Purim, sweet Rivella was up to her ears in work. Consider, she alone had to do all the baking, all the shopping, all the wrapping, and all the negotiations with all the housewives. Just to figure up the bills for the orders required the mind of a banker. Rivella had her difficulties, especially with customers like Sarah Pearl, who was rich enough to wear pearls even on weekdays. "You owe me, Sarah Pearl, for half a dozen honey cakes with raisins at 6 groschen apiece. 6 times 6, how much is 6 times 6? Isn't it 33? And 4 almond cakes you bought at 8 groschen each. It cost me 7. I swear by my health, 4 times 8 is 48. And 2 large braided buns without seeds, and 3 small braided buns with seeds, and I figure these 5 items come to 24 groschen. It costs me more, may we both be well. 5 times 24, how much is that? Let's say it was 6 items, then it would come to a ruble plus 6 groschen. But since it's 5 items, it must come to a ruble minus 6 groschen. So how much is all that together? Let's see. 33 plus 48 equals 82 plus 1 ruble and more than half a ruble plus 22 minus 6 groschen. So how much is left? Isn't that a ruble 90? How about that? What kind of 62? Where did you get 62? Shouted Sarah Pearl. And both women started figuring up the amounts all over again. May you live and be well, Sarah Pearl. The total is exactly right. 6 honey cakes with raisins at 6 groschen apiece. How much is 6 times 6? Not 42? Congratulations, said Sarah Pearl. You're doing very well. Just a minute ago it was 33 and now it's gone up to 42. Not bad. Rivella called Naftali away from his work. He was as angry as a hornet. What is it with these women? They can't add 2 and 2 together well? Let's see your figures, but hurry, time doesn't stand still, you know, Naftali said furiously. Both women presented him with the figures at the same time. Naftali listened with his eyes shut, counted on his fingers, and quickly became confused and angrier. He flew at his wife. I told you 1,000 times that if you don't have the brains to add 2 and 2 together, you shouldn't be selling your goods in big amounts. You should sell them one at a time. I'll show you. What do you have there? 1 honey cake? Give me 24 groschens. Another honey cake? Another 24 groschens. A braided bun? That's 6 groschens. Another bun? Another 6 groschens. See? Sarah Pearl, the rich man's wife, wasn't about to allow herself to be dealt with as though she were an ignorant pauper's wife, but she had no choice. Where else could she buy such delicious baked goods for Purim, if not from Rivella? Came Purim, and Rivella was the best. Everyone has his time. If you need a thief, you save him from the gallows. That's why everyone in town was so envious of her. Golden hands, they said, the gold piles up. Both of them fill up sacks of gold when Purim comes. Some people are blessed with beautiful singing voices, some with artistic hands, and some with dancing feet. But Noah, Naphtali's eldest son, was blessed by nature with a talent for carving. Even when Noah was a child, he was constantly being punished and nagged by his parents. Did you ever see a boy who goes around day and night cutting and whittling and carving and carving and carving? In order to stop the child's nasty carving habit, they sent him to Cheder and instructed the Rebbe 100 times to slap his hands if he saw him so much as holding a penknife. Better to make sure he studied the Torah. But the Rebbe's efforts came to nothing. Noah left Cheder with very little Torah, but he did display a rare mastery of carving. And he carved everything, whatever he laid his eyes on. There were experts in Kazrilevka who claimed that the boy possessed genius. Were he to live in a big city, he would surely become, well, who knows what he might become. Meanwhile, may his hands wither, on all the pews and all the lecterns in the synagogue, he carved figures of humans and birds and, forgive me, pigs. For carving pigs in the synagogue, Noah really caught it from his father, from his mother, from the rabbi, and from the shul elders. Whoever was offended by this deed, let him have it. Imagine what a boy can do in a holy place. Pigs, they said. But that didn't teach our carver a lesson. However, the spark glowing inside him, that heritage of his biblical ancestor, Bezalel, architect of the great temple, wouldn't be extinguished. His gift finally shone forth. Like all such revelations, it came about unexpectedly through a chance circumstance. It happened a few days before Purim. He was given a wooden Purim noisemaker as a gift, the kind that children shake in their hands when the story of Purim is read in shul. Whenever the name of Haman, the villain of the Megillah, is mentioned, all the children drown out the sound of his name by making a racket with their noisemakers. Noah examined his noisemaker from every angle, quietly taking it apart and putting it together again. It occurred to him that if he only had something to do it with, he could make a noisemaker that would put all other noisemakers in the world to shame. Noah lacked only 2 things, material and tools, that is, wood and a knife. What to do? Well, wood was no problem. Wood could be appropriated from his mother's wood pile near the stove. But where could he get a tool, a knife? He hit on a plan. He would go to the market and sell his present noisemaker, and with the money he would buy a knife. But a misfortune occurred. Misfortunes always happen to innovators. The first customer Noah approached took him by the hand, led him straight to his father. "What's going on, Reb Naphtali? Your son is selling noisemakers now?" Of course, our innovator had to suffer his punishment before having a chance to explain to his father why he needed the money. Only after Noah had confessed through bitter tears what his reason was, did Naphtali, after calling him a dumb ox, buy him a knife and help him select the wood. Noah sat down immediately to his work and labored so intently that in just 1 day several Purim noisemakers took shape under his hands, but such extraordinary noisemakers that the whole town came to gape and to congratulate Naphtali. It's clear, Reb Naphtali, that with this son you have nothing to worry about. He's a moneymaker already. From that time on, the entire town, one and all, knew that if anyone wanted the best Purim noisemaker for his money, he would have to go to Naphtali's son Noah, the carver. And no matter how much merchandise Noah prepared, it was bought up instantaneously. Every year when Purim was over, you could hear Noah saying the same thing. This was a great year for noisemakers. There was good reason for the townspeople to envy Naphtali his children. Not only does he earn gold, and not only does she earn gold, pulling it from both sides when Purim comes, but they also have such talented children. If you want to see something really nice that won't cost you much, then take a trip to our Kazrelefka at Purim time. Stop at whatever inn you like, look outside, and be prepared to see something special. From early morning on, you can see boys and girls wrapped up warmly in shawls, most of them barefoot even though it's still cold out and there are snow flurries, splashing through the mud from house to house. In their hands, they're carrying large cakes or platters or bowls covered with white napkins. These are all Jewish children delivering Purim gifts, which the Kazrelefka women send one another, exchanging with each other the Purim goodies prepared by Sweet Ravella. Italea sent me 2 braided buns and an angel cake and 2 almond torts, so I'm sending her in return 1 braided bun and 2 angel cakes and 2 honey cakes and 1 almond tort. And Yenta Miril sent me a strudel and 2 almond breads and 2 poppy seed cakes and a puff cake, so I'm sending her in return 2 puff cakes and 1 almond bread and 1 strudel and 2 poppy seed cakes. That's the way the Kazrelefka ladies cleverly figured and combined and balanced their exchanges so that no one would feel slighted and no one would seem too generous. In other words, an equal exchange. And since everyone in town was friendly with everyone else, there were many people exchanging Purim gifts. Even with the help of servants and one's own children, it was impossible to manage. One had to depend on others for all the exchanges. Poor boys and girls who were willing to run errands to earn Passover money were in short supply. The luckiest were the poor people who had the most children. In Kazrelefka there were many such lucky people. But the luckiest of all were the gold spinners, who had so many sons and daughters that it was a wonder even for Kazrelefka. I can't even tell you exactly how many they had, because you're not supposed to count other people's children. May they just grow up and be healthy. What harm do they do anyone? Wintertime they huddled around the oven like little kittens, and summertime they roamed the streets playing games, raising such a cloud of dust that the street darkened and a passerby could suffocate. Fists would fly and curses were heard that would singe your ears. But when Purim came, the children felt that they too were suddenly worth something. A good deal, in fact. Everyone wanted them for himself. When a Kazrelefka lady put in her baking order to Ravella, she also reserved the time of one of Ravella's children to deliver the cakes. Ravella's children were dispersed throughout the town, carrying napkin-covered trays and bowls full of baked goods. Their cheeks were flushed, their foreheads beaded with sweat, their eyes aglow with excitement. Their paths would cross in the muddy streets, but they had not even a minute to stop and peek at what the other was carrying. But in passing, they would hurriedly exchange a phrase or two, so abbreviated that a stranger might not understand altogether what they were saying. Fatty, where to? To Big Leah's. And you, Pigeon Toes? To the old lady with the long nose. Make anything? Not much. And you? I already have a ruble and 12 groschens. And you, how much? No time to count, but more than you, I think. Wipe your nose. Break your head. And they separated, each going his own way. The Kasrilevka townspeople had been sitting at their Purim dinner tables for quite a while, singing Shoshanas Yaakov, having already heartily enjoyed Naftali Longlegs' Purim players, while Naftali's children were still running from house to house, delivering Purim gifts and gathering coins from the folks who enjoyed teasing them. "Come here, little boy, who are you? Aren't you Naftali's boy?" "Yes, Naftali's." "Have you put away at least an even 20 rubles?"
"Hee hee."
"Tell me, don't be ashamed."
"Hee hee."
"He's giggling, hee hee, but just look at him. You know he'll bring home a pocket full of gold. That's a household of gold spinners." All of Kasrilevka had long since gotten up from the holiday feast. Many were thinking of going to sleep, and even more were already fast asleep and snoring loudly after the brandy they had drunk in honor of the holiday, which celebrated the destruction of an enemy, Haman. But one family was just sitting down to enjoy their Purim feast, slicing the large braided Purim challah and taking to the food with great spirit. Those were the gold spinners. They were all hungry and tired and their legs ached, but each had an interesting story to tell about his day, a raft of anecdotes. Naftali told of his Purim players and how well they had performed that day, extraordinarily well. Only Vashti had stumbled over the lines. "May he stumble from now till Passover, no matter how many times we rehearsed it so that Vashti should say, 'In the Megillah I'm always put down,' it comes out with his nasal voice, 'In the big illa I'm always but brown.' What kind of 'in the big illa I'm always but brown'? What an idiot, may he rot. But go talk to a stuffed up fool." That was Naftali's story. Ravella had even funnier stories about her customers who, it seemed, would do anything to save a little money. One woman decided to steal a fruitcake. "Imagine that," she said, "someone trying to steal from me." "Madam, how many fruitcakes do you have there?" I asked. She said, 4. I said, "Well, and what about the fifth?" Her face turned red and she said to me, "Oh, is that a fruitcake too?" So I said, "What did you think it was, a grandfather clock?" Said she, "Oh, I thought it was a honey cake." Said I, "So are honey cakes free?" Ravella told her stories, and then Noah's turn came. His stories had to do with noisemakers. This was a great year for noisemakers. Everyone wanted a noisemaker. Just noisemakers and noisemakers and noisemakers. By yesterday afternoon, I was already all sold out. This one man kept coming up to me asking for noisemakers, so I said, "I'm all out of noisemakers." Said he, "That's no excuse. You must give me 2 noisemakers." Said I, "But where am I going to get 2 noisemakers?" Said he, "Why don't you give me your own noisemakers?" "Will you ever stop with those noisemakers?" said his father. And Noah looked down, lowered his head, and blew his nose under the table. That really tickled the young children. Now it was their turn to relate adventures from their Purim gift delivering. There were so many stories to tell that it would have taken till Passover to finish. But meanwhile, it was still Purim. They were tired from a long day's work, and it was time to go to bed. The youngsters went off to their places around the stove and soon fell into the sweet, sound sleep of happy children who've had a full, exciting, and profitable day. It was far into the night. Kasrilevka was long since asleep after the great Purim feast and the Purim desserts. Only 2 people in the entire town were awake and not even thinking about sleep. They were the gold spinners, Naftali Longlegs and Sweet Ravella. They had quietly locked the door, drawn the curtains, and sat down with their strong box. They wanted first to total up the coins that the little gold spinners had brought in that lucky day, but they couldn't. They figured and figured, but they could never agree. Either he made a mistake or she made a mistake. Each blamed the other. "Did you ever see such a woman who can't add two and two?" said the husband. And his wife replied, "If you're so smart, you count it, big financial expert." "You count it," he said. "You know better." "No, you count it," she replied. "You know better." It was the time to settle the accounts and to decide what was needed for the family and what they could afford. Shoes for themselves, jackets and dresses for the children, that was number one. How about matzah for Passover? How about goose fat? A crock of borscht? A sack of potatoes? It was amazing. No matter how many times they calculated, no matter how extravagant and spendthrift they wanted to be, the money was always just enough for shoes for themselves, jackets and dresses for the children, matzahs for Passover, goose fat, a crock of borscht, and a sack of potatoes. Both of their faces were flushed, their eyes glistened, their cheeks glowed, and their hearts swelled. Both of them felt that the world which God had created was, after all, not such a bad world, and the people in it were, after all, not such bad people. However, it did hurt them that their own people were envious of their success. If someone else had a good day, one good day, it was so heartily resented. "May Kazrelevka burn to the ground, a town of begrudgers," said Naftali. And Rivella came to the defense of the town of Kazrelevka. "Poor people, for God's sake." "Poor people," she says. "To her everyone is poor. Ha ha, Kazrelevka people, paupers, beggars, penny pinchers, egotists." "Bite your tongue," said Rivella, frightened by her husband speaking so bitterly. From a distance they could hear the crowing of a neighbor's rooster, an old rooster with a worn-out voice. He would start enthusiastically in the upper registers, but by the time he reached the low notes, his voice would give out. "Cock-a-doodle-doo!" It almost sounded as if he were asking himself a question. "Old fool, why are you screeching?" The sky was beginning to turn blue. Dawn was breaking. The day was beginning.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our story and that you have a happy Purim filled with Purim spiels and delicious cakes. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.